Welcome back in, Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5, the game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe in for Jared Stillman today, and now joined by my man, forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. It's all company today, Chris.
It is, man. How you doing, man? You doing all right? You enjoyed this crazy football weekend?
Oh, what a fun weekend it was.
Man. Isn't football fun when it's like that, when it's nail-biting time and you see two great or four great quarterbacks going at it? I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable. No, two great quarterbacks.
Three of the four have rings.
I know.
Josh Allen does not and won't get a chance at one this year. But here's the crazy thing about it. Watching both of those games, I felt pretty much since they kicked it off like, Bucks got that. I think the Bucks are going to win this. They just felt in control. Green Bay was off. They just couldn't get into it. And then I kind of felt the same way with Kansas City, especially in that second quarter. Kansas City really opened it up. Mm-hmm. And I know Buffalo battled, and they looked like they were getting close, but they could just never get back in it. So it was one of those where, all right, I was wrong because I picked Green Bay. I picked Buffalo.
Too.
I was wrong. But that's just how I felt. They were two good games.
They were good games. But here's what I was watching. When we watched the Green Bay game, look at the body language of Rodgers. I knew the game was over in the second quarter. I mean, he wasn't himself. Usually when he makes some mistakes or throws an interception or does something that he doesn't like, he still has a pep in his step. When he was making mistakes and when he was getting pressured by that Tampa Bay Buccaneers front, he was on the sideline. He was kind of pouting a little bit. I mean, he was kind of like, what is going on? You know, I'm frustrated. His eyes looked like he didn't want to be there. And when I saw the look in his eyes, when I saw his body language, I'm like, this cat doesn't want to be out here. I mean, you can just see it. I mean, he's walking off the sideline slow and, you know, he's sitting, you know, with his coat over his body, just like, I don't want to really be here. When I saw that, I said, this game is completely over.
Yeah. And there was a clip that they showed on SportsCenter where he's yelling at the defense, get
right,
a stop, and,
right,
which I'm fine with. Like you need, you know, as the quarterback, you got to do that because you need your defense to go out and make a play. But I think some of the frustration was, Chris, they forced Tom Brady. Tom Brady in the first half looked like Tom Brady.
Yeah, he did.
Like good Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady in the second half looked like a 43-year-old that shouldn't be out there.
That
was the difference. The defense for the Bucs,
oh my God,
made enough plays and rattled Rodgers, knocked him around, that they were able to hold on and win the game. But I think that has to be the frustrating part for Rodgers, that, you know, his defense did make stops.
Mm-hmm.
They got the ball back. His offense couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, if you look at with Brady, and this is what makes Brady so special, is even though the game wasn't going like he wanted to, he never panicked. That's what makes him so special, and that's why I love watching this guy. And, you know, I looked at him. I said, why is Brady playing at a high level? Why is Brady doing the things that he's doing? It's because he's becoming a mature quarterback. When you hear me say a mature quarterback, he's going to his 10th Super Bowl. And when I say mature quarterback is, if you look at when he was back with the Patriots, when things were going wrong, he's throwing his helmet, he's screaming at people, but now he's teaching. He's saying, defense, let's go. He's telling his receivers, hey, if you run this route, if you get the guy off the spot, if you stack him, I'm going to throw this ball. If you get man-to-man coverage, I'm going to give you this. That's the difference between the Brady with the Patriots and the guy with Brady with the Bucks. He's a teacher now. And if you look at Bruce Arians, his head coach, he said, I just sit back and I watch him teach. I watch him coach. I watch him take over this team. And that's when we talk about a player or a quarterback taking over the offense. That's exactly what we saw when he beat the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and I think, too, And I was quick to judge and quick to say, uh-oh, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
But I think that you really had to see a few games of Bruce Arians and Tom Brady together and working, you know, with one another for it to really work. Because there was a time they were 7-5 and you're going, this isn't going to work. Tom's going to run BA out of town. And I was even – I went as far to say, listen, I think Josh McDaniels will end up being the head coach because that's what Tom will want. And maybe at one time, that's what he was thinking. I just think they didn't have, and I've heard you talk about this and how important it is, they didn't have the you know, person-to-person time during the off season. Sure. Everything was through a computer, and you can't learn anything about anyone just staring, you know, at a computer screen. I mean, you know that. It's all about the interaction and the meetings and just being able to do those things, and they missed that. They weren't able – not only did Tom not – was he unable to get that with his head coach, but Byron Leftwich as well. the offensive coordinator. I mean, so there certainly were some things that they missed in the offseason that just had to work itself out. And once it did, this is the result that you get.
But you know what the key ingredient to this whole thing is they had to trust the process. I mean, they had to trust it. Brady had to trust his receivers. The offensive line had to trust him. Bruce Arians had to trust Brady. All these things, because if you look at the beginning of the season, there's a little friction. I mean, you can see it. There's a little friction. And Bruce Arians was saying some things in the media that I bet you, Brady was kind of upset about. But then once Bruce understood and built a relationship with Brady, have you noticed that later on down the road, he wasn't saying the negative stuff about Brady? He said, you know what? That's not going to work. I'm going to go and say, you know what? I'm going to let this guy do what he does. He's a great player. I'm going to let him take over this offense. I'm going to let him take over this team. I understand that I'm the head coach. I understand that I'm in charge. But who's really in charge on offense is Tom Brady. And when you give the reins to Tom Brady and say, you know what? I'm going to give you this. And I want you to produce. And that's exactly what we saw. And that's what makes this team so special and dangerous.
Here's the thing that's crazy to me. Tom Brady, as you said, he's going to his 10th Super Bowl.
Unreal.
He's won six. He's already got six rings.
It's crazy.
He's filled up one hand and he's already on the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So, I look at that and I go, What are you doing? Like, what do you have left to prove?
Yeah.
You've won Super Bowls. You've won MVPs. Like, they should honestly, the moment you say, I retire, just go ahead and put your bust in Canton.
Yeah.
Because why wait? It's silly at this point. Yet, at 43,
unreal.
He still has that. Now it's like, yeah, I want to show you I can do it without Belichick. I want to show you that I can do it with another team.
Yeah.
And he's one win away from doing that.
It's crazy.
You've been around a lot of different type of players and personalities in your career, and now you see it from a younger level in coaching. Why do you think he's motivated to continue to do this when he really doesn't have to?
Number one, there's two things that really sticks out with me with him. Number one, he loves the challenge. I mean, when he does this interview, he absolutely loves the challenge. When people say that Brady's too old, when people say Brady's arm is done or he can't do this, he can't get, along with the offensive coordinator, he can't get all these crazy things. He loves the challenge. Number two, he wants to do things that's never been done before. That's what keeps him going. Has there ever been a time where the home team is hosting a Super Bowl? Absolutely not. You didn't think he want that challenge? Say, you know what?
Sure.
I'm going to Tampa Bay. That's where the Super Bowl is at, and I guarantee you, I'm going to get my team there. That's why you love these guys. And there's a guy that I know in the gym that played with Michael Jordan, and I asked him. I said, "What makes Michael Jordan so special? What makes Michael Jordan, want to just strive to be the best?" And he said this. He said he's the most competitive guy he's ever met, and number two, he said he hates to lose. That's exactly what Brady is. And you see guys in NFL, you see guys in baseball, you see guys in hockey that just have that it factor. Brady has that it factor. That it factor is, you know what, you're not going to tell me what I can't do. That it factor saying, you know what, I'm going to do things that's never been done before. That it factor says, you know what, I may be down, I may be out, it may not look like we're going to win, but guess what, I'm going to dig out, I'm going to cloud, and I'm going to win this freaking game. That's the kind of the cat that I would follow.
So I said this earlier, Chris.
Yes,
the
sir.
Headline for Super Bowl 55 is the GOAT versus the future GOAT.
Two goats.
One's a baby goat. One's not quite there yet. I don't know if you saw this, but the two quarterbacks from the AFC title game, Mahomes and Josh Allen, when Brady played in his first Super Bowl, they were in kindergarten.
That's unreal.
That's
unreal.
Crazy.
Unreal.
Crazy to think about. But I go back to 2 years ago when Brady and the Patriots beat Mahomes and the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. And I know Tom reached out and talked to Mahomes after that. And I feel like Mahomes is the type that he listens to anything that's thrown his way.
Mm-hmm.
He's just he studies and he absorbs. And you saw him grow,
man,
not only as a quarterback but as a person after that loss. He learned from it. And you know that you learn more from your failures than you do your successes.
Right.
So how much do you think, because I think it's a lot, will go into this rematch, so to speak, with Brady that maybe he learned from losing to him a couple of years ago?
I think the thing that he learned from Brady is how to be a leader. You know, when you have Mahomes just thrown into this position and, you get the AFC Championship game, you don't know how to lead because you're not in familiar territory. So I think that he's going to take away from Brady to say, you know what, I watch how he led this team to victory. I watch how he inspired his team to win. So I think that he's going to take that from him. But you better believe, even though, you know, Brady is the greater player now, I'm telling you, Mahomes is chomping at the bit to say, you know what, I understand you beat us that last time, but guess what, I'm coming at you. And this, I'm telling you, I cannot wait to see this game. I'm going to get my popcorn ready. I'm going to have my Captain Crunch cereal. I'm going to have my ginger ale. And I'm turning off my phone. And I'm going to be after this game, baby. Because I'm going to tell you something. You're just watching poetry in motion. You're watching two guys who love the game that inspire their teams to be great. They inspire their cities to be great by watching their play, by watching them give it their all. You're watching, you know, Brady. Sometimes he gets hurt. He comes back and he throws a touchdown. Then you have Mahomes who has a concussion the week before and has a hurt ankle, and he's limping to the sideline to do everything to help his team. These are the type of games that you want. These are the type of Super Bowls that you want, and these are the type of players that you want to watch. And now we have a chance to see it, baby.
Aaron Schatz from Football Outsiders just tweeted this. In 2001, Tom Brady had a rematch in the Super Bowl with the last team the Patriots had lost to that season, St. Louis. Mm-hmm. In 2020, or now 2021, Tom Brady has a rematch in the Super Bowl with the last team the Bucs lost to this season, Kansas City. I mean, if the and the storylines are all centering around Brady, like I think people forgot. Well, you know, Mahomes just won the Super Bowl. He's the Super Bowl MVP. Like they're yeah. defending. They're trying to go back to back, which hasn't been done since Brady and the Patriots did it. I just think that people are so fascinated and impressed by the fact that now Brady has come in his first year with the new team and he's already gotten them to the Super Bowl. And as you mentioned, host, you know, they're the host city. This is the IR, or I'm sorry, reading a tweet that just came out. And but this is the first time that that's happened, which is crazy in the 55 years of the Super Bowl that a team has never hosted, or the host team has never played in the Super Bowl. But I'm with you. I think this is going to be a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. I think that Mahomes has learned so much in a short amount of time, and learned a lot last year, learned a lot this year, because as you know, when you succeed, that puts even more pressure on you. I've heard you talk about coming off, you know, your guys' Super Bowl appearance to the next year of, well, now we got to do it again and then some.
It's hard.
And it's hard to do that. And so it's already impressive of where he is, and I'm looking forward to the matchup too. We're gonna have 2 weeks to talk about it, but it's gonna be a lot of fun.
You know what I'm looking forward to this game is how much speed is on the field. You got the Kansas City Chiefs, you got Tyreek Hill, you got Hardman who's fast, and then you got Chris Godwin. These are Olympic sprinters now. I mean, these are guys that can run, and it's just going to be a flat-out track meet. And, you know, when you have that kind of speed on the field, and when you have that kind of explosiveness, not just at the wide receiver position, but at the quarterback position, I'm telling you, boss, it's going to be exciting.
What I was reading that just came out for the Predators, Lucas Pizzo, who made his debut last night, has been put on IR. Just pointing that out, throwing that out there, that little piece of news. When we come back, Chase McCabe, Chris Sanders, now I want to look at things from a little more of the Aaron Rodgers side.
Okay.
Should he want out of Green Bay?
Stop it.
That's a tease.
I'm hanging up on you right now. Listen.
Okay. We'll talk to you after the break. We will discuss Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
There's a lot of unknowns going into this offseason now. And I'm going to have to take some time away for sure and clear my head and just kind of see what's going on with everything. But it's pretty tough right now.
Aaron Rodgers, after the 31-26 loss in the NFC Championship to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, back here on Stillman & Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. We'll take your calls in a few minutes at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. So I asked the question, and Chris didn't like it. He was ready to hang up on me. Should Aaron Rodgers want out of Green Bay? Listen, I understand. So number one, that clip there, and if you watch this post game, he was very pouty. He was very upset, and I get it. Like, you just lost the NFC Championship game. You've lost two in a row. With Matt LaFleur as your head coach. So I understand. He's obviously a passionate guy, and I appreciate that. But I am going to go back to the NFL draft and the decision to draft your eventual replacement instead of getting you a player that could help you right now with this team. Yes, they did some great things this year. I really thought they were the team to beat, and they got beat in the championship game. Sometimes that happens. But if you're Aaron Rodgers, Chris, you can't ignore that. Your organization, it's not the fact that they're looking to replace you eventually. Father Time's going to take care of that.
Stop it.
But they didn't get you that. They didn't get you a piece. They used that on a piece to replace you and not a piece to help you. So I understand being upset and taking the time to think about the future.
They're a couple of plays away from the Super Bowl. Not a game, not two games, three games. They're a couple of plays away. And I understand everybody hates to lose, and I understand Rodgers. Understand he's going through his motion, but I'm gonna give you an illustration, and I'm gonna come back to my point in a minute. I remember I was coaching in Montgomery Bell Academy, and a lot of our kids were tired, and everybody was throwing up everywhere. They didn't want to run, and our coach called everybody up, and he said this. He said, when you're going through trials and tribulations and you want to quit, you have to tell your emotions to shut up, and what your emotions are going to do, say you need to quit, you need to do this and do that. Aaron Rodgers right now needs to tell his emotions to shut up, because his emotions saying, I need to go to another team. We need this. We need that. They drafted Love in the first round. All these things, as opposed to looking at what he has right now. Look at the receiving core he has. He has Lazard. He has Adams. Look at the running backs that he has also. He has Jones, Williams, and Dillon. He has a great offensive line. They're building their defense. So why would you take your talent to another team when you're maybe one or two pieces away to actually going back to the NFC Championship and actually winning the Super Bowl? So I understand emotionally he's hurt. I understand that, he wanted to go this year. But, man, if you stay there, you never know what might happen. You might end up in the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. I know they're in cap trouble, and they are going to have some tough decisions that they have to make. I mean, they're just going to have to. I mean, some of the weapons that he has in pieces overall, they're not going to have. I mean, I think they're like $27 million over the cap right now. I mean, so they have some tough decisions that they're going to have to make, and he's one of them. I mean, you got to look at it from the other side too, Chris. They have won a Super Bowl. It's been a while. It's been 10 years. They've taken really good shots at it. They've gotten close. They've gotten a couple plays. They got outplayed yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough pill to swallow. I think that's why he's upset. But the Packers may look at it as, yeah, we drafted Love. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a process. We're going to have to see how it works. In my mind, I'm thinking, is Matt LaFleur the right guy for that process for a rebuild? I'm just saying, is he?
He went to the NFC Championship
with Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
He's 20. I just talked about that. He's 26 and 6 as a head coach with Aaron Rodgers. It doesn't look like that. Does it look like that with Ryan Tannehill? Does it look like that with Josh Allen?
Mm-hmm. I mean, but still, Rodgers, he's a great talent. I just think that did you hear what he said? He said, I just need to get away from the game. And he can think clearly. I understand that, a lot of emotions are flying around, but you really want to think logically. And I think the organization needs to think logically, because if you don't and you start leading by emotions, then that's when you start tearing stuff up. You tear up the team. You tear up relationship, as opposed to saying, okay, you know what? Let's clear our mind. Let's clear our thoughts. Let's clear all these things, this gunk in our mind. And when everybody gets all their emotion out, let's sit and talk. What's best for the team? What's the vision of the team? Are we going to use this year to rebuild? If we're using this year to rebuild, then yes, we go with Love that they drafted in the first round. But if they still want to keep the pillars of their team together, find a way to keep these guys together on offense, find a way to keep these guys together on defense, and just start adding a couple of pieces to get back where you need to get.
But the thing is, would you fault him if, like you just said, that, hey, listen, we want you here, but you're not. We're gonna have to move some pieces because cap. We just have to. And you look at the roster, and he's thinking, man, this just isn't gonna be really good. He's an older player, so I think it's similar to Brady. Brady looked at the Patriots and was like, man, it's just time.
Yeah,
it's time for me to go somewhere else because this around me just isn't what I need at this point in my career to win. And then he goes to Tampa, that's loaded on both sides of the ball, and look where they are. They're in the Super Bowl. He was that extra piece. Mm-hmm. If I'm Rodgers, I'm kind of looking at this the same way. Now, it's different with him and his contract and the things that they have to figure out there. But I certainly would understand if he's like, you know what, let me go jump on with a team that's ready to win and give, you know, and take a couple of more shots at it of winning a Super Bowl, because I think I have a better chance to do it elsewhere than I do here.
And there's two things. Is if he does do that, then he's got a number one. You said it, you alluded to it. He's got to make sure it's a good fit. I mean, you can't just say, okay, I want you to let me go and go be with the team. You got to make sure good fit and they have some talent. And then number two, we still don't know the status of COVID. So if COVID is in part of that, then you're going to have to relearn all your players all over again. You're going to have to learn a whole different system and learn all these things over again. So if the COVID thing, then a solution hasn't come. I mean, I know they have a vaccine, but, you know, we're practicing all that. If that situation doesn't change the practice schedule, then I would stay in Green Bay, because now you don't have to start things over. You don't have to build relationships over again. You can still continue the identity of your team. So a lot of things come into play. You know, where do I fit? You know, how can I go there where there's a lot of talent? And then the COVID stuff. So he's got to make sure that he's thinking clearly. Not thinking on emotions, but he has to be thinking clearly, what's the best opportunity for me, but what's the best opportunity for me to win a championship?
The biggest problem, though, is going to be his contract. Because if they just say we're going to part ways, the dead cap hit is like $37.5 million.
Jeez. Get him out of here.
Well, and I mean, what team is going to take that?
Some team would now.
Yeah, I mean, hey, maybe it's New England. Who knows? Maybe they're like, bring him on. Now, after this year, there's a potential out because it gets a little bit better. It's only $17 million. There are some things that they can work out with a potential out. But it's a tough situation to be in. Now, do I think he retires? I don't. I just think there's a lot left in the tank. I mean, I've seen crazier things happen in sports and especially in the NFL. But I just think that this is, like you said, you made a very good point of the emotions and getting away from the emotions and just taking some time to clear your head. You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough decision.
And I'm going to share this with you. He completed 70% of his passes, 48 TDs. Does it look like he's on a decline?
No.
Absolutely not. So, you know, and, you know, I think now if his numbers were down, he only had like 12 touchdowns and 18 interceptions and completing 54% of his passes. Now you got to sit and say, okay, I'm done. I mean, look at what happened with Breeze. Breeze wasn't the same this year. I mean, he went through his injury and he sat out a couple of games. But if you look at the last game that he played, he was throwing interceptions is because he didn't have the velocity. So when he left, when he was getting ready to leave the stadium, he looked up because he knew that his career was over. I don't think we have the same thing with Rodgers. Rodgers left upset as opposed to saying, you know what, my play has declined. I still can play this game. And I think he's still hungry because you can hear it in his interview that he wants to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he went, and that I think is the toughest part for a player. You know, winning the first one, is difficult, but winning number two is even harder, I think, because there's so many of those guys that, especially when you think about the players that he's in the same, you know, in the same room with, that he, it's like that extra one just gives him that much more cachet, if you will. Mm-hmm. Not that he needs it. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He's accomplished everything, but I know having that second one means the world to him, and it's crazy too. You know, you talk about Tampa Bay being the first host team to play in a Super Bowl. That's crazy to think that in Rodgers' career, that was the first time that he's played in a championship game at home at Lambeau. So that, you know, that's pretty telling. And they, you know, and they came up short.
Yeah, they did come up short, but you know, they accomplished almost everything that they wanted. I mean, they had the best record in the NFC, and then also they had home field advantage throughout. What else can you ask for? I mean, you had the team, you had the defense. They were rebuilding that defense, and they got some guys on that defense to really help that defense. And then their offense is explosive with Adams and that great running game. in the passing game. So it's right there. You're right on the cup. So it goes back to management. What does management want to do? Do they want to keep Rodgers? Do they want to rebuild and start with Love? Or do you want to get rid of all these players and then have to rebuild another 15, 16 years to get back where you are? I don't think they want to do that. Why? Because everybody wants to win now. They don't care about later. They want to win now. So if you're talking about rebuilding and starting with a new quarterback and, you know, letting guys go, you have a recipe for disaster.
When we come back on Stillman and Company, we'll get into coaching decisions and the field goal being the biggest one that really comes to mind. Some of the decisions we saw by the coaches over championship weekend. It's Chase McCabe for Jared Stillman today alongside forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It was just the circumstances of having three shots and coming away with no yards. And knowing that you not only need the touchdown, but you'd need the 2 point. So the way I was looking at it was we essentially had four timeouts with the 2 minute warning. And, you know, we knew we needed to get a stop. And I thought we were going to have a stop there at the end, but, you know, we got called for the PI. And it didn't work out.
Matt LaFleur on the decision to kick the field goal on 4th and 8 rather than going for it. Welcome back in, Stillman and Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. TriStar Movers with 5-star service. Chase McCabe in for Jared Stillman today alongside Chris Sanders. If you did not hear the top of the show or see the tweet, Jared did test positive. He's okay. He's got mild symptoms, but we'll be doing the show from the house tomorrow and hopes to be back, but hoping Jared is okay and
yeah,
has a speedy
right.
recovery for sure. But Chris, yes, the show must go on, as as they say, and we'll pass this along too. The Chicago Blackhawks will be in town tomorrow and Wednesday to take on the Preds. Today, the NHL announced that forward Alex DeBrincat and defenseman Adam Boqvist were placed on the COVID-19 protocol, so they will not be available for the Blackhawks against the Predators tomorrow. And speaking of that game, be listening. You'll have your chance to qualify this hour for a pair of tickets to tomorrow's game. We'll announce that winner later on in the 5 o'clock hour. So let's talk about coaching decisions. You just heard that clip from Matt LaFleur. To me, he completely got it wrong. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. I would have gone for it. And I know Aaron Rodgers also said after the game that had he known that they were going to kick if they didn't get it, he would have called a different play because Matt had told him, you know, to call, given him the play call duties there. He called the play. He would have done it differently. Okay, that's kind of an excuse, whatever. But bottom line, Chris, at that situation in the game, you're going to have to trust your defense no matter what.
True.
Your defense is going to have to make a play. Because let's say you go for it and you don't get it. Well, they got to make a play backed up against the goal with the offense backed up against the goal line. Let's say you make it and you do get it, but you miss the 2 point. You're still asking the defense to have to make a play and to do their job. And then if you do what they did and kick the field goal, the defense is going to have. So no matter what, the defense is going to have to do something. Why not go for it? And if you're Rodgers, let's be honest here, on third down, why not keep it and run it? Because then you make the decision easier on your head coach, because even if you don't get it, which I think he would have, I thought he had daylight, if it's 4th and, you know, goal from the 3, that's a no-brainer in my mind. Right. I just – that whole sequence right there just didn't make a lot of sense to me. And it's not all on Matt LaFleur, but the decision to kick the field goal is, and I thought it was dumb.
Yeah, and the thing about it is you need – and I kind of disagree with you just a little bit, and, you know, and I say that respectfully.
That's fine.
But it's 31-23, and it's two minutes left in the game. You need points. And here's the thing that we got to understand as listeners is when you're in the red zone, it tightens up. When you if you're on a 50 and it's 4th and 8, now you have more room. But when you're on what yard line was it on? 8, 9? Yeah, yard line.
It's 4th and goal from the 8.
It the field shortens, so you don't have too many play calls. The defense knows you're gonna pass, so they're gonna play you pass, they're gonna tighten up on defense and not let you beat him. So I thought it was a great call to go for the field goal because you need points, and yeah, you gotta have the defense to stop. But people got to understand that when you're in the red zone, everything is tight. I don't think they would have got the first down if it was 4th and 8. I really don't, because the way that they were putting pressure on Brady, you know, with Tampa Bay's front, I don't think he would have got it anyway. So take the points and put it in your defense hands. That's just my opinion.
Okay, so let's dissect this piece by piece here. Mm-hmm. Let's start with triple coverage in the back of the end zone, which I understand Rodgers can thread the needle, but mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, especially when he ran up to the line of scrimmage,
mm-hmm.
and we have the opportunity to see where that is because of the blue line. To me, and I'm second guessing, you know, because I have a better view than he does. Mm-hmm. He's you know, got these guys bearing down on him and has to make a split second decision. So it's not really fair of me to second mm-hmm. guess that. But I thought he had daylight. Keep it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See what you can get out of it. Even if you don't get in, it makes it, if you do go for it on fourth down, mm-hmm. like I said, fourth and four or fourth and three is much more manageable than fourth and eight. So I didn't really understand that he was, you know, he was trying to force it in.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with that. What did you think of that whole play sequence?
You know, I went back and looked at it because in my mind, I'm like, man, run the ball. See, we see that. But you got to remember, he's looking on the other side of the field. He doesn't see the opening over there that we see. So I want to be careful when I say that. Yeah, he should have ran it because there's total daylight. But if you look at the route, you see Adams, he kind of stops, and it looked like there's a window, but then it closed so fast. So that's just a decision that he made. And I don't think that he saw that he could, you know, he could run the touchdown. We see that. We see replay. But in actuality, he's looking the other way because he thinks that his wide receiver is open, and that's why he didn't run the ball. But he should have ran it.
I feel like, and you kind of said this earlier, things are so tight in
the red
zone.
They're very tight.
But I feel like one of the hardest plays to call is if you are in a goal-to-go situation, but it's like from the eight. That's
totally different.
You don't have the, you know, in normal times you get the first down, or mm-hmm. you know, you do have two plays. Like it is maybe a little bit different of a chance, but on third down with goal to go from the eight, that to me, I don't know how some of these coordinators or quarterbacks in this situation make that call, because it's such a tough one.
I mean, it is tough, and when you if it's fourth and eight, you know, I mean, when I say fourth and eight, it was fourth and goal. So it's not that you can get
right.
8 yards and get a first down. No, it's fourth and goal. That means the pressure's on because you have to make a touchdown. You can't get a first down. You have to make the touchdown. So when you get in those pressure situations and things like that, the defense is going to try to squeeze you, keep everything in front of you. And just like with Adams, there was two guys on him, and Lazard, and they came up and pressed the receivers because they knew that, you know, Donovan Sue was going to pressure him, and that front was putting so much pressure on Brady. They knew that they were getting to him all night. And with this, they were sending blitzes and just not getting beat by these receivers. So, you know, I understand what everybody's saying, that he should have ran it. I understand that, you know, they should have went for it on fourth and eight. But at the end of the day, it's all depends on where you're at on the field. And that's what people got to understand. It's not – now, if they're on a 50-yard line and it's fourth and eight, now you have so many rooms. Now you can run, you know, combination routes, curl flat or slant spear, all these things that you can run. But there's not too many things you can run when it's fourth and go, because it's so tight down there, and that's what we got to understand.
So you said that you take the points.
Yes, I do.
I disagree respectfully. I think that the way the defense had rattled Brady, because like you said earlier, Brady had not played well in the second half.
Not at all.
I mean, he had the three picks, and it was Rodgers and the offense that couldn't do anything with it. But they were given the opportunities.
Whoa! Did you say that one? Say that one phrase again.
What, given the opportunities?
No, after that.
Rodgers in the offense?
They wasn't doing too much. So I think the head coach was like, okay, our offense is kind of struggling a little bit. Why would we go for it on fourth and eight? You see what I'm saying?
Right, but my counterpoint to that is, mm-hmm. why would you not? Because the defense had been doing so much. I would rather have my defense with a position to back Brady up at the goal line, mm-hmm. to force a turnover or get a sack for a safety or something. I'm not a head coach, mm-hmm. but I look at it as my defense was so amped up and had been playing so well. I would rather put them in that spot mm-hmm. than what they ended up doing.
Right. But then on the flip side, okay, say they back Brady up at the 1 yard line. Okay, there's 2 minutes left in the game. And what happens if you do back him up? You're going to burn all four of your timeouts or three of your timeouts, because the 2-minute warning is going to be gone. And right. then you got three timeouts, and all they're going to do is run three straight plays, and you have about, what, 35 to 40 seconds to try to score a touchdown.
I mean, but you were pretty much in that position anyway.
Yeah,
you,
but the,
I know you got points, yeah. but you were still in that position.
True, but the offense was struggling, though. I mean, the offense wasn't playing well. The receivers were not getting open, and you had, you know, Adams dropping balls, and, you know, the running game wasn't doing anything, and, you know, you had the Bucks front that was just harassing yeah. Rodgers. So it's so many things we can play, and I think both sides are valid. Your point is very valid, and my point is valid also that – you know, it's just hindsight. You just don't know because of the situation that happened.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is danged if you do, danged if you don't.
You're right.
And they were in that situation because they couldn't make plays the rest
there
of the
game. There you
go. You know, it goes back to how we started this hour of I felt from the snap that Tampa just had control.
They
Even
did.
When they were making mistakes, they still had control.
Yeah.
And that was ultimately what it was. And then in the other game, I thought McDermott was okay. You know, Andy Reid coached a solid game.
Oh my God.
I thought McDermott was okay. There were some times where they took points and kicked the field goal where I was kind of like, well, it's the Chiefs. You know, you can't be settling at this no. point. You got to be and that could be coming from experience. You know, that could be that McDermott had never been in that position before mm-hmm. and Josh Allen had never been in that position before. That's one of those things that you just kind of have to learn from.
I just think you looked at two teams. You had the Buffalo Bills that were, I mean, I know they were happy to be there, but they didn't have that much experience of being in the playoffs in the last couple of years. But then you have, you know, homes that are in these pressure-type games. I mean, look at last year in the playoffs. They're playing the Texans, and they're down 24-0, and they found a way to win. And then this year, you know, they're down 10-0, and you're like, whoa, what is going on? Then all of a sudden, you see Tyreek getting loose. You see Kelsey getting loose. You see Mahomes throwing passes. And next thing you know, they're blowing the Buffalo Bills out. I mean, it just shows you a team that's confident in what the scheme is, that's confident in the coaches, that's confident in everything they do, even if they're down. And then you have a Buffalo team that if they struggle, then they have no response like the Kansas City Chiefs have.
When we come back, Chase McCabe, Chris Sanders here on Stillman and Company, I'll get Chris's thoughts on how he feels like the Titans will handle their coordinator situations now that they need an offensive and defensive coordinator. Tune in to Robbie and Rexford every weekday morning on Preds Game Day at 8:45 this season for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Your next chance to participate will be tomorrow morning, so check that out. On Robbie and Rexford. More coming. Stillman and Company. Chase in for Jared today. ESPN 102.5 The Game. That is correct. Chase McCabe in for Jared Stillman today alongside Forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. I know we're trying to get a qualifier all set up. We'll have that drawing a little later on in the show. Chris, I talked earlier when I was going through just coaches and mm-hmm. kind of in that conversation, it shifted into what Mike Vrabel needs to do for this Titans staff. So we know Arthur Smith was the offensive coordinator. Now he's the head coach of the Falcons, and I'm about to call them Titan South because Dean Pease is going to go be the defensive coordinator.
Wow.
He's hired Matt Pease, Dean's son, as an assistant. He's hired Shane Hoffman as that was a special teams coach at one time here. He's on the staff as an assistant. So he's certainly bringing in some familiar names to him, which I get that. I mm-hmm. totally understand that. You see a lot of coaches do that because it's all about familiarity and continuity, and that's what he's doing. But that leaves, that already left an opening for Mike Vrabel for an offensive coordinator. A report came out today. They are going to interview Pep Hamilton, mm-hmm. most recently with the Chargers as their quarterbacks coach. Of course, he does have experience. He's been an OC before. Does that matter to you as a player of whenever, you know, they say, hey, this is going to be the new, you know, OC, mm-hmm. in this case, a play caller, if they have or haven't called plays, like how much does that really matter?
It doesn't matter. I think the philosophy changes and just the different terminology changes. And that's why, in my opinion, I think they should hire within. And the reason why I say they hire within is, and one of the guys I want them to hire is Pat O'Hara. He's the quarterback coach for the Tennessee Titans, because now you don't have to change up so many things. You can keep the concepts and the vision of the offense of where you're going. I'm going to give you a perfect example. When Les Steckel was my receiver coach, and then he went to offensive coordinator, a lot of things didn't change because he told the receiver coach how to run the routes on how he wanted it. Then the next year, or a couple of years later, we get Heimerdinger, and Heimerdinger wants us to run routes totally different, and he brought in his terminology. So those are the things that you're going to run into. That's why I think they should, you know, get somebody internal. I mean, you can have Pat O'Hara or Todd Downing to be the tight end coach.
Keith Carter,
guys like that, because why? They're around the system. They're familiar with the terminology, and you can keep things the same. You can tweak it a little bit onto how you want it, but the concepts stay the same. The terminology stays the same. Then now you can build off what you're doing, because now if you look at the receiver position, you look at the tight end position, you look at the offensive line position, you know, at the beginning of last year, they kind of struggled at the beginning. But then once they understood the concept of what Arthur Smith wanted, then that's when this team was so successful, and we saw the fruit of it this year.
Congratulations to Gabriel Kemp. They qualified to win the tickets, which we'll announce a little later on, to tomorrow night's game. I hear what you're saying on that, but here's my I also see when things stay the same for a long time, complacency sets in. And I get what if they go one side of the ball staying in the house. So let's say on offense they go with Pat O'Hara or Downing or Keith Carter. I don't hate it. I kind of want outside. I want new ideas, but I wouldn't hate it. Then on the other side of the ball, I go outside, because
I agree.
Because I think that if you bring somebody in here that maybe thinks the same way that you do. Which is important, you know, for Vrabel's case. But also we'll go, well, you know what, Mike, I watched your games last year, and, you know, I saw that you guys did this. What if we do this with this guy? I think that that's good, because then, you know, Mike Vrabel might go, well, you know, I didn't even think about that. That's a good call, good idea. I think, you know, fresh set of eyes, especially on the defense, would be good. But also, I mean, just being honest, if I have to pick, I'm going outside on both, for both reasons.
Well, let me ask you this question: which side of the ball was the best? Was it offense or defense?
Offense.
So why would we want to change that? And I agree with you 100%. I think that with the defense struggling so bad, I want a fresh set of eyes. I want you to go outside. I know that we have Shane Bowen, the linebacker coach. You have McKenzie, that's the other linebacker coach. Yeah, they were familiar with the defense, but the defense was almost dead last in a lot of categories. So go get a fresh eye. Go get somebody that's familiar with changing defenses, that changes the concept, so they can start completely over and have a clean slate. Because you don't want to go in with the same concepts, the same blitzes, the same thing, and keep getting the same results. Get a fresh set of eyes in here. A fresh guy to start a vision and bring an identity to this defense. Because if we look at the Tennessee Titans defense this year, what was the identity of this team? I don't know. But when Dean Pease was here, we knew the identity of the team. And I think when you get a fresh set of eyes in there, they're going to give you the identity, and you can start fresh all over.
My only concern on and I think that this is why my concern with staying within for offense is because, and I know Vrabel's not an offensive coach, so he has to address it a little bit more than he did, but that situation didn't work. He missed on addressing it. It worked staying inside with Arthur Smith, but he missed staying inside with Bowen and not giving him the title. I still will not understand why he didn't give him the title.
I know, that's weird, ain't it?
and anyone that says that, well, the title shouldn't matter. No, it does.
It does matter. Yeah, it does.
It matters a lot, because this is how it comes across to me. It comes across to me that he didn't give him the title because he wasn't sure if he was the right guy for the job. So if he doesn't put the title on him, he doesn't have to backpedal a year later and say, hey, I messed up. Now it's just a, well, we didn't have one, now we have one.
Yeah, but who's the main authoritative figure on the defense that's calling the defensive plays?
See, that's where it gets confusing for me.
Right.
Like, if it's a collaborative thing,
right,
and Shane Bowen wants to make this play call, but you have your boss
in
your ear going, I don't know, what do you guys think about this? Or what do you think about this? Or maybe next time we should do this. Yeah. Like, how much authority and how much control do you actually have over the play calls if you have your boss? I know if I have my boss, mm-hmm. we love him, Ryan, but if he's saying, hey, what do you he's think right. about this? Yeah. You said that, Chase, not me. What do you think about this? Yeah. It's like, yeah. okay, but what if the first time you go with what you want to do and it messes up, how likely are you to stick with that, or are you going to listen to your boss? And then it gets kind of confusing of who's actually calling the plays.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great point, because when it comes down to cutting time, who's going to make the call?
Yeah,
who's
going to
make
the
call? Is it Vrabel? Is it Bowen? Bowen? Who is it? Is McKenzie? Who's making that play to say, okay, on third down, we're blitzing who? We're blitzing this guy. We're blitzing the back. We're blitzing the safety. Who's making it? Who's making the call? I don't know.
Right, and I think Ian brings up a great point. Because I've been in a position before where I have been looked at as one position, but there was no title. And so, you know, I feel like there is a line you have to walk, whether it's with, you know, your subordinates or your boss or whoever. But then once you have the title, you know, you can have tougher conversations, and it's not that you're being disrespectful. It's just that you're proving a point. You're saying, hey, no, I think this is going to be better for this situation. And I feel like that pulls more weight with the title. It just does, because it's your job to do that.
Exactly. And I'm going to give you a perfect example, because I coach football at Montgomery Bell Academy, and we have a great head coach, and we just have a great coaching staff to where the communication is good. Like at halftime, when we make adjustments, right, coach goes to every coach and says, okay, what do you think we should run? I say, coach, we can do a double move. We need to do this, this, and this. Okay, running the ball, we talk to the running back coach. We talk to, you know, the offensive coordinator, whatever. But then when the game is being called, we know that he's making the call. Even though he's getting our suggestion, we know that he's the head coach. He's going to make the play. He's going to do that. And it's the same thing on defense. So on the Tennessee Titans defense, when it's time to blitz, when it's fourth and three and the other team's going for it, what front are you going to be in? What coverage are you going to be in? Who is making that call?
Right. And Vrabel can get up there at the end of the year press conference and say, you know, Shane called the plays, Shane ran the meetings.
But then why don't you give him the title?
Exactly. Like, that's all fine and dandy. So what's right. the deal here? Why? Mm-hmm. Why? And he just wants to turn it back on, why do you guys care about a title? Well, this is why.
Yeah.
If we're thinking this, don't you think there are guys in your locker room thinking that too?
Yeah. And do you think that's why maybe Byard or some of these other guys struggled this year?
I think that yes, because I think that Dean Pease just has that type of impact on a player in coaching. And, you know, it could be too that Bowen is bad. You know, he's juggling all these things right now, you know, when he was doing essentially two jobs, that it was just too much for him. So I do hope that they address it. The thing that I like and also drives me crazy about Vrabel and this organization is you just don't really know. They only announce things that they have to announce. and I know that, like, the Pep Hamilton interview is out there. And but I wish there was some news. I wish that there was a report of, oh, yeah, they've looked at this guy or, you know, talked to so-and-so. And you just don't get a lot of that from
mystery.
Mike Vrabel.
But you know what? It's the same thing with Arthur Smith. They were interviewing all these people for the OC, and next thing you know, they're like, Arthur Smith gets the OC job. We're like, who? Huh? Because, you know,
That worked out.
Okay. It worked out really, really good. So I know he keeps quiet, but they have a game plan of what they're doing. I mean, I know they're going through, you know, they're sifting through everything and make sure they're covering all bases to make sure they interview an OC and a DC. But at the end of the day, they know the direction of where they're going.
When we come back, I'm going to ask Chris a very important question that concerns what he saw this weekend, but also relating that to the Tennessee Titans. We will do that next. Chase McCabe in for Jared Stillman today alongside Chris Sanders, Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game.